Dinky Decker in the Foreskin might be the intro. Hello and welcome back to the Too Much Time on Our Hands podcast. I have no idea why I introduced like that, so let's try again. Hello everyone, welcome to the Too Much Time on Our Hands podcast. It's the time of year where after 12 months of saying we should definitely record a podcast, Marvel, which has become movies continue?
Cinema continues.
The WhatsApp group
that no one's in, but yeah, whatever.
We've been rebranded.
Cinema continues, the podcast is what it's going to be, and we plan to do more this year than we've done previously.
Yeah, we'll see if that happens. Yeah.
But we're kicking things off with one of my favourite pods of the year, which is the top 10 films of the year. Joining us, I'm going to introduce in the style of one of the films of the year. I'm going to say, hi, Steve.
Hey.
You just meant to say hi, Dan.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hi, Barbie.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Hi, Terry.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, Mark.
Oh, sorry, that's the wrong film.
Joining us is Dan. He's the new recruit, I think, to the cinema group. So,
yep. Hello.
He's been watching films with us all year.
Depends if he keeps doing
which. So that's 12 minutes in of recording, and I've got to edit. But just fuck it, that's staying there. You're number two.
Terry's had a beer.
So we're going to do top 10 films of the year in two podcasts. Terry's corpsed already. We just called Steve to corpse. It's going to be a long night, guys.
It's already late, is it?
So we're going to do...
What is the time? So we're going
to
do
top 10 films. This podcast will be 10 to 6 of each of us, and also our combined 10 to 6. Also, we're going to talk about the worst films. We're going to talk about TV series, and we're going to talk about honourable mentions as well. Should we just get straight into it? I've introduced you already. Terry, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you, mate.
Steve, how you doing?
Hi, Dan.
There you go, fine. Well done. No, you're on a delay.
You were too Roddy sketch. Yeah.
And Dan, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. That's how that works.
I've already asked how you are about 7 times. You've been around it for 2 hours.
Yeah, Steve cooked us a delightful curry, so there might be some extra sounds on this one, but yeah. Right, so we're each going to give our number 10, then each give our number 9. And then, but while we're doing it, each give our number 10, then the combined number 10, each give our number 9, combined number 9.
I think it might be better to just do a rundown for the combined.
You reckon? Well, just at the end, yeah?
Yeah, just go 10.
There we go. We do this on the pod, on the fly. Obviously, we've had weeks to work this out, but here we are now. Okay, so individual top 10s then. Should we start at number 10 then?
Let's go.
Rather than, you know, start at number 6. No? Yeah, start at number 10. All right, cool. Who wants to start? Let's kick it off.
Let's start with Dan, a new member.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Your 10th favourite film of the year, Dan.
It was actually quite hard to get to decide what was going to be in what order when it got to like the last 10. So these, they could be interchangeable really in terms of the last top 5. So number 10, I've got John Wick 4.
Yeah.
So recent convert to the John Wick franchise. I think I only watched the films this year.
But you watched all of them?
I've watched all of them.
Yeah.
Mission Impossible was on it.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so I've finally got around to watching John Wick, the great series of movies, and yeah, the fourth one was just a lot of fun.
It's 3 hours as well.
Mm. 3 hours of just madness.
I mean, an hour on stairs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
It didn't feel like 3 hours though, did it?
No. It whipped along.
Mm. Yeah.
Felt exhausted at the end of it.
Oh,
like,
my God,
I'd been running around with him.
Yeah, and that's one of the best things about the John Wick films. You do feel exhausted by the end of it. You are.
That's it. He does take damage. He is limping. He's not just like going, ooh, jumping up and running away.
Yeah, definitely. And this one's definitely, like, I love the whole thing with his friend as well, who doesn't want to kill him, but obviously has to do it for his own reason. Yeah.
Mm. The guy is, for some reason, typecast as playing kind of like...
It's Donnie Yen, isn't it?
Yeah, he's playing blind people, because he's in Rogue One, isn't he?
Yeah.
Jedi.
Yeah. Yeah, he's amazing in that as well. But it's, yeah, he was brilliant. Some of his scenes were some of the best ones.
The whole bit in Hong Kong, or was it Shanghai?
I can't remember.
In the Continental in Asia was fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Where they deconsecrate it so they can fight on the Continental grounds as well.
That was great. And also Bill Skarsgård as a villain in this.
He was very, very
evil
good.
As fuck.
He's your ultimate villain, isn't he?
Yeah, he's doing so good. Who's he playing next? Oh, Nosferatu.
Nosferatu. Yeah. And he's Eric Draven in the Crow remake.
Is he?
Oh, interesting.
They've shot it. They shot it this year. There's been no leaked pictures or anything.
Good.
So I've been all over it trying to find out. Much happier with him than Jason Momoa when that nearly got made.
Wow. Jason Momoa's the crow.
Yeah. It got, literally, it was about to start shooting. Corin Hardy was going to direct. Jason Momoa was going to star. And at the last minute, they pulled funding. I've got nothing against Jason Momoa, but he's not actually an actor, is he? He's a charisma actor, like The Rock.
I don't know, he's pretty good in Fast X.
He's very good. Yeah, I'm not saying he's, but he's not like an actor.
No.
John Wick is on all four of our lists in various places.
Mine was number 9, I think.
We'll talk about it a bit more then as we go through.
It could have easily gone up higher in my list. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, like I almost forgot about it. And then I was like, oh shit.
I didn't think it was this year.
Like, yeah,
it came out very early on.
Yeah.
Definitely. Steve, number 10.
Fun enough, I just mentioned this, Fast 10.
Fast 10 at 10.
Fast, yeah. I think for me, it was one of those ones where it felt like it was probably the best film we've had in the Fast and Furious franchise for a while.
Yeah.
And fun enough, it's because of Jason Momoa.
Yeah.
He was the highlight.
He was perfect. I think he had that kind of like, the trailer didn't really, obviously the trailer done a very good job of hiding actually what type of character he was going to be. Because in the film, in the trailer, he was very led to be very much like a macho
kind standard
of like, yeah. But then actually he had that very camp, should we say camp charisma.
Yeah, when
about
he sat
him,
like doing his nails with the two corpses and stuff like that.
He stole the show.
Yeah. Jude Stokely was having so much fun doing that.
Which
as
Vin
well.
Diesel didn't like because he blamed him on the poor box office performance.
Not that it was released at the same time as like John Wick.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it sounds like Vin Diesel's got his own problems at the minute. So, that for me, I came out of that. And felt like that coming out of a Fast and Furious film for a while.
I think that was the best one since 5.
Yeah, 5 is the best one by far.
Yeah.
And I think that was the best one
since 5. And
you got
Hobbs and Shaw as well, which...
Yeah. Hobbs, I quite like Hobbs.
Yeah, it's the best one I've seen since 1. Because I've only seen Fast and Furious 1.
I mean, the giant bomb rolling through the Vatican City was fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, it was insane. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But is this the one where they went to space, or was that a
previous one? No, that was the last one. Yeah. So I think I remember when we recorded the Fast and Furious pod that, or in general conversation, that if they ever go to space, I'm going to stop watching them. But then he kind of carried on.
But then they did,
them.
And he's still here.
Yeah, but, I think the worst thing about them going to space was they kind of half assed it.
Yeah.
Like, I think if you're just going to say Fast and Furious in space, have a fucking battle in space.
Yeah,
do it
lean into it. Mm. Yeah.
Have them driving on like a space station.
Drifting around.
Yeah, drifting around.
In a Lamborghini, not in a fucking Nissan or whatever it was.
And the thing is, that would probably seem more realistic than how they did it in 9.
Well, none of it was realistic, so just, fucking lean into it. Just go crazy.
No one's going to a Fast and a Furious film expecting realism.
No.
And that's what made this one so good, was that it just kind of leaned into the silliness of it.
Mm. I mean, the only issue I had with it is I kind of feel like the ending kind of gave away how the next two films are going to go.
Yeah.
So obviously there's two more films coming out. I personally think it's going to end, they're going to spend the whole next film completely apart.
Yeah.
And then they're going to come together again at the end of 11.
Oh, yeah.
To set up. But like, that's only my opinion.
This is their Infinity War and Endgame, isn't it?
Yeah.
Furious Assemble.
Yeah.
Fast Assemble.
But no, I worked on the list for the fact that I generally got a good feeling coming out of it. And I really, really enjoyed the film. And Jason Momoa was fantastic. So my number 10.
Nice.
The only appearance on any lists, that one.
Yeah, I thought it might be.
I mean, I'm just glad I get to talk about that because it wasn't far off. It's in my top 20.
Mm.
Like, it's. And that's. It was really hard to whittle it down to 10 this year.
Yeah, I struggled with a couple,
The 10 that I really liked. But it was. That was definitely one of those ones that I kind of wanted to at least talk about it because it was better than the last ones because it was stupid.
Mm.
And I loved it. So, 10.
Yeah, so my Ted is also only appears on my list and no one else's, although I think it was close and it was Evil Dead Rise.
I fucking loved it.
I'd forgotten it was out this year. It was only when I was going through my Letterboxd that I realised it was out this year. And I rewatched it last week because I wasn't sure if it was a list contender or not. But I just, I think it really the previous Evil Dead remake, which is obviously a remake, trod over the same thing, was fucking gnarly and great. But this, bringing it into an urban setting, I think really helped it.
Yeah.
And the fact that it just, I mean, spoilers, it went fucking balls to the wall. No one's fucking getting out of this alive. And just some of the imagery, the way they did it, the sort of fucking exorcist walking across the ceiling, mountains of blood like you expect from a Evil Dead film. And it's just, fucking grim to watch. I mean, I have a thing. I can watch someone get their head lopped off, but like a needle into skin or something like realistic, and the bit where they put a cheese grater down the back of her leg, and it like
nasty.
Grates the skin.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
be like saying poor people to someone in Wonkaville.
That's one of the best things in that fucking.
Did you go watch that in the end?
Yeah. Yes, we did.
Was it good?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that, yeah, yeah.
It's good. It's not Paddington.
No, it's not Paddington.
The Paddington films are absolutely incredible.
They are great.
I've only watched them for the first time.
Shane is a Tory, but yeah.
It's very musical and I didn't like the songs. There's one good song and then the rest, they're quite flat songs. And then he sings, what's the song from?
World of Pure Imagination.
Yeah, yeah, he sings that again, which is obviously a great song. Because I have rewatched Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory since then.
Oh, God, it's so good.
Gene Wilder one, yeah.
But no, it's not bad. Everyone in it is good, but I just felt the music was very flat. And hence, it is not in my list.
Evil Dead Rise,
nice to see just an out-and-out balls to the wall.
Such a great homage to the original one as well.
Yeah.
Like the blood and then the bit with the chainsaw.
And you had the sort of false start of it starting in the woods, in a cabin, but then it goes back like 3 days and then we go into the massive block of flats.
It's unrelenting from the start as well.
Yeah, it's just fucking...
getting scalped.
You can tell... Lee Cronin, I think, might have been the guy who directed it. You can tell that he loved the Evil Dead films and wanted to make an Evil Dead film. It wasn't like, oh yeah, there's this Evil Dead film knocking about and someone's picked it up. It was someone who loved making it.
Anyone that's going to watch it has already watched it by now, so we can spoil it a little bit, can't we? Or we can say spoilers.
Yeah.
Someone dies by choking to death on an eyeball.
On an eyeball. Yeah. That's, yeah.
Gets spat into their mouth.
I mean, like the children get set on fire.
Yeah.
Stabbed through the heart. And at the end, they amalgamate into some like giant spider monster.
Yeah, it kind of plays on what she says earlier on about, like, I want you all fucking... inside me, kind of thing. Or I want to be part of you. And then
and get put for a fucking wood chipper.
Yeah. Fucking unreal.
Yeah, fucking brilliant. Yeah, and a good old fashioned scalping.
Yeah.
There's a spider.
No, it's not. Literally, the mum is possessed the whole way through, and then her two eldest children get possessed and die. And they literally, like, mutate.
Okay.
So it's like the three heads and they're using like the legs and the arms. So they're sort of spider-like, but not an actual spider. Yeah. I don't know if that still works for you or not.
No, that's fine, as long as it's not an actual spider.
No, no actual spiders. No. My number 10 is Thanksgiving, which I really, really like.
Oh, I really want to see this.
Best slasher film I've seen in a really long time. Gory as fuck. Eli Roth leaning into himself, I think. I think Eli Roth has kind of... I know this sounds stupid because this is the most immature film I've seen in a long time. But he's kind of matured to a point where he's like, doesn't have to be horror porn like the Hostel films or anything. Can have a bit of fun with it, like taking the piss out of Black Friday.
But it was like Hostel, but it actually had a proper storyline that was cohesive and worked.
Yeah, and was funny as well. Mm. Like, it didn't take itself.
Yeah, we pissed ourselves watching that in a good way.
The death. This isn't giving too much away. There's a bit where he puts someone in water, then puts her head up on like an icy door, then rips the head off, so it rips the skin off the side of her face. And she's trying to unlock her phone and it doesn't recognise her face.
Oh, shit.
And it's stuff like that. And it's like, it's done in such a comedic way. Mm. She's a horrible piece of shit in the film, it's fine.
Because like, the whole thing is, it's like Black Friday and like a Black Friday rush and people get killed. And even that's funny.
Yeah.
Like someone gets scalped by a trolley where she falls over and her hair gets caught in the wheel.
Anyway, Gina Gershon.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah, Gina Gershon. Yeah. But yeah, it's just so funny. The way people just talk, it's just funny,
yeah.
And then it cuts to a year later and like people involved in that rush.
I think half the funny parts are the police dealing with the deaths as well. Yeah. Like when you're turning up the next day and it's like the aftermath of the death. And it's like half of someone in one bit and half of someone somewhere else. And it's...
Yeah, half a body like strapped to the sign for the Walmart or whatever it was.
It's really good. Really, really good. Really... It's smart, but it's stupid at the same time. It's got a real South Park feel to it, I think, is probably the best way of
it. It's on my list, but higher.
Yeah. Deservedly, probably, so yeah.
Yeah, I wish I saw it after trying to catch it soon.
Yeah.
When it comes out.
Yeah, definitely.
It's got to be coming out soon, though, isn't it, you think?
Mm. Unless they hold it out for next Thanksgiving, just to be...
That'd be pointless, though, wouldn't it?
And they have now confirmed that Thanksgiving 2 will be coming soon.
You can see how it would happen as well, so yeah, makes sense. Number 9.
Number 9. Yeah. Check. The D&D movie I've got from Dungeons and Dragons. Nerd.
Okay.
Movie.
Yeah, this is my number 9 as well. So
yeah. It's not a film I expected to like.
Yep.
I wanted to hate it, if anything, when I saw the trailers, being like a D&D kind of fan and worrying about how they were going to do it. But they actually pulled it off really well.
Yep.
It seemed like it was made by people who actually had like enjoys the game Dungeons and Dragons. So they kind of have a lot of fun with it. And yeah, there's lots of great humour and great action.
Felt like it was going to be like this massive cash cow.
Yeah.
Like, we're just going to make as much money from D&D as we possibly can. The whole thing plays out like a D&D game, for starters.
Yeah.
It's done with so much love, affection, and heart that I didn't expect
it to. Do you think, because I liked it, but didn't love it, do you think the fact that you're into D&D made it better? Because they did it and did it well. Because to me, I was just like, it's an all right action film.
Maybe, because it could have gone either way. I could have ended up really hating it or really really enjoying it, depending on how they pulled it off, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because there were certain moments and certain gags with, like, spells. So, like, there's, like, a speak with dead spell.
Yes.
Which in the game is a really fun spell to have, where you basically can ask a corpse, like, 3 questions. And they do a whole sequence in that with that spell, which is just how it happened in a game at home.
You can ask it 5 questions. Well, that seems rather arbitrary. And it's like, why would something work like that? So, yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing I came from it was, like, it gave me ideas for D&D, weirdly enough. So, like, I loved the bit with the attunement of the helmet. Because, like, in D&D, it's like, you have a long rest, you've attuned to a helmet, you can attune to 3 items, whatever. Like, I love the idea that attuning to something's difficult. Like, the thing doesn't want to be worn by you because you doesn't think you're worthy for it to wear it. So, like, actually going through, like, trials to actually wear this magic item makes magic items a bit more special in D&D, I think, as well. So it's something I would consider doing in actual D&D games in the future.
Yeah.
But hey, you get a magic sword. Okay. Can I tune to it? Yeah. It's actually going to be really difficult, though. Stuff like that might be quite fun. I thought it was really fun as well. Funny at times. Thought Hugh Grant was...
Yeah, Hugh Grant. Hugh Grant seems to have found his niche as being, like, a supporting character, but just fucking going with it. Because he's great as the Oompa Loompa as well.
He is, yeah.
In Wonka. Obviously great in Paddington 2.
Mm-hmm.
The gentleman.
Yeah.
He's good in that. Although, let's not talk about his accent in The Gentleman.
Yeah.
Although, it's better than fucking Charlie Hunnam's in Rebel Moon.
Anything.
Anytime Charlie Hunnam speaks.
it's my number 9 as well. I think I just wanted to put it on the list because I was probably the biggest critic of it and went in and went,
same.
This film's fucking great. It's just a fun action film that doesn't feel like they're trying too hard to fit certain D&D gags in whilst also making it feel like D&D as well.
It was maybe the right heart.
Yeah.
I
remember seeing it. It's got quite a stacked cast, though, isn't it?
Chris Pine.
Michelle
Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Because I was worried that Chris Pine was going to...
They're quite a cool
double act, isn't it? Yeah, they're really good together. Because I was worried Chris Pine was clearly playing a bard character.
Yeah.
I was worried they're going to do him like the stereotypical bard where they're just like a kind of like a fuckboy and just want to shag everything.
Mm-hmm. What does bard mean?
Bard.
Shakespearean.
I assume it was like a D&D term.
It is. Oh, it's a D&D. Oh, I forget. It's a class in D&D. Mm. They're basically, the whole character's about being charismatic and they can play music and things like that. And they usually, in the game, people tend to pick them as like being like these guys that just want to like shag everything.
You watched The Witcher, haven't you? The TV series.
The first series, yeah.
Yeah. So you know Jaskier in The Witcher.
Yeah. Okay, I'll move it.
But they didn't actually do that with this character. And it worked.
Just genuine heart as well. Like, the emotional bits feel genuinely emotional as well. Something I found in this film, like, I thought was quite affecting at times.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Yeah, really, really good.
I'll have to check it out.
Worth a watch. Definitely worth a watch.
But is it one of those films where, like, if you don't know D&D, you wouldn't understand?
I enjoyed it, but I feel like there was a lot of stuff that went over my head.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy it.
For me, the best part of it was they planned everything like a heist, like you would in D&D. So, like, there was like, right, we've got something we need to do in D&D. How are you going to go about doing it? And the joys of D&D is you can do absolutely anything you want. Like, if you, like, most parties can even just say, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to go to another place. Fine, you go off and do that.
Mm.
But if you've got something important, like you're given like a task to do by the dungeon master or games master or however you want to look at it, then like you as a group have to plan how you're going to do it. Like, as a dungeon master or games master, like, I think, I don't know, you've done a bit of it in the past. I've done a bit in the past. Literally just paused it. It's fine. You kind of have like a set plan of like one specific way they could do something. Like, you don't make it impossible.
No, I try and leave it as open as I can in a sense.
But yeah, but like you know there's a way they can do it, but then you just leave it up to them how they would plan it. There's an element of that. There's a bit when they have to sneak into the castle, and the way they plan it is very D&D. Like, right, so one of us is going to do this, we're going to attach this to this, and that's going to get us in. The druid's going to change to this, that means they can sneak in and do this. Yeah, really, really good.
But then when you try and execute the plans, it never goes right.
Yeah. Okay. And it doesn't go right in this as well.
Because it all comes down to dice rolls at the end of the day and chance comes in.
Exactly. It's good.
Activated the nerd.
Yeah. I don't mind. Number nine, Steve.
John Wick 4.
Yeah.
So I know we've kind of previously discussed it. Yep. Really enjoyed it. Didn't see it straight away. Knew I was going to enjoy it because obviously the John Wick films are great. I think they're so over the top, but it works because it's John Wick, if you know what I mean. Like, if this was another series of films, if this was his own film, you'd watch it and you'd be like, okay. But because...
Yeah, they built small. John Wick 1 was very insular.
You know, yeah. And I just thought it was, you know, just as good as the other ones, really. I've watched it a couple of times this year. And like we said a minute ago, it didn't feel like 3 hours long.
No.
Like, it kind of flowed really, really well.
It doesn't let up either.
No, exactly. And I feel like the ending was really tense. You know, the bit like that, the shootout at the end, that was very kind of like... But it all kind of came full circle and you kind of feel that... You almost feel like John Wick just sort of like indestructible, don't you? You can't, but it doesn't, like I said, it doesn't seem
the
like...
The Baba Yaga.
Yeah, like you don't feel like, oh, it's a bit over the top. You watch and you think, everything that happens to him, even over the series of the films, like, we've said it before, when you got other films where people get shot, they get taken down, like they come back with a vengeance, and then but you see the damage his body takes throughout the film, and it seems realistic, and it showed even more so in this one, and I kind of hope... I'm assuming that they've got a couple on the horizon. They've got more coming.
Well, you've got Ballerina with Ana de Armas.
Yeah.
And there was the Continental series, which I've watched half an episode of.
Is that actually out now, is it?
Yeah. It's on Amazon Prime.
It's not
meant
to be very good.
They've left it kind of like open where if Keanu Reeves wants to come back and do it, he can, but he can also just bow out.
I think the studio very much want to continue.
Of course, because they could, as long as they've got good ideas for like great action sequences. Like
I think that's part of the reason they're like, we've made like 3 films. I mean, they're probably, 12 hours that as a... Mm. As a 4-film thing, they've used everything they can think of, and they need a break now to go. Because the bit I love in this one is where it sort of goes video game, and you go and you're
like
on
the bird's
ceiling,
eye view. Yeah, that's
with
one of my...
the bird's eye view, and he's got that fucking dragon gun that's just like a fucking flamethrower shotgun,
shooting out like phosphorus, like
fucking brilliant.
That's great, and also
and obviously the dog survives, Steve.
And also like the sequence where it's like a homage to Warriors.
Yes,
it's also a great bit. I love.
Oh my god, yeah.
I loved the film Warriors, and it was just a real cool little. Margin there.
Yeah, so great film. Love it. Number nine.
So mine isn't the only out and out comedy on my list, and it was Strays.
I honestly thought you were going to say Joyride then for a second.
No, it's Strays. It was a film I really looked forward to. We saw the trailer a million times, and I pissed myself laughing every time in the trailers. And it was as funny, if not funnier, than the trailer. I cackled my way through that film.
There was definitely bits that were funnier than the scenes in the trailer.
It wasn't a like the bit where the invisible force field with the dog and just
it's a brilliant scene.
The funniest bit I don't want to give away because I want people to go fresh seeing it.
I'm assuming it's the cameo. The cameo. There is a cameo and it is one of the finest cameos ever, but it is just and there's a homage to Revenge of the Sith as well. Where they get high on shrooms and kill a load of rabbits.
Oh yes.
Hey guys, I found toys.
But it's literally these 4 dogs. I can't remember all of it's Will Ferrell is the main dog, Jamie Foxx. Yeah. I can't remember the other two.
Isla Fisher does the
Isla Fisher,
the Australian Shepherd.
Parks.
Oh yeah, and Randall Park.
Yeah, Randall Park, yeah.
And it's exactly what you'd expect from that. Jamie Foxx is like this tiny little cute dog who's got like a massive attitude. He starts on his own chat. He starts on his own reflection. Like, your little puppy paws come here, you motherfucker. And it is just, it's just... that you can't talk about it too much if you don't want to give it away, but they encounter other animals. Like, there's a police dog that's an absolute narc that they encounter.
The best one's the Labrador.
The Labrador at the fair. The Labrador at the fair is also a highlight. But yeah, it's rare that I get excited about a comedy because you do think, that's it, that's what's in the trailer. But there were so many more laughs. Genuinely really liked it. Haven't seen it since. Is it out yet? I assume it must be because it came out quite a long time.
I've seen it in Asda.
Yeah.
I'm allowed to say Asda. Right?
Yeah.
Other supermarkets are available.
Not the biggest supermarket.
But yes, when it hits maybe £5 on DVD, I will purchase. But
I haven't seen it. But everyone who said they've seen it, loved it.
Yeah. It's just, it's like a Will Ferrell comedy, but they're fucking dogs, and it is. It's just ridiculous in places.
Dogs. Yeah, they're dogs though, so it's fine.
They're up because like there's a bit where they all hallucinate, and one of them hallucinates a couch that he fucks.
So no one actually violates a human, doesn't violate a dog or anything.
No,
I mean, there's the bit in the trailer where that they're shagging gnomes and stuff. He's like, that's it, telling your daddy, hi, I'm hello, your son. Funny meeting you like this.
Oh, okay, that's fine then.
Yeah, it's really, really funny.
And Bill Hader is the fucking awful owner who's going to get his dick bitten off.
Wow.
If you don't, that is the premise of the film. He gets dumped by his owner and he travels back to bite his dick off.
Fair enough.
But yeah, that's my number nine.
Dungeons & Dragons was my number one. I've already spoken about it. Yeah, I really like it. More Dungeons & Dragons. It didn't do very well, which is a shame because I'd like to see more of these films. So
surely it did enough for that, because one of the key things with D&D, the next one doesn't have to have the same characters, be in the same realm. It could be completely different under the same banner.
I would love it if it was the same actors playing completely different characters. That's the dream.
But is there any rumours of a new one?
I don't think they're going to do it. I genuinely don't think it made enough money. Like, that starts the year, action films didn't do much.
Mm.
We'll get to a point with a film that kind of saved cinema this year. But kind of a slow start to the year. And loads of films didn't do enough money. So I guess we'll see. But yeah. Number eight now.
It's Strays again, which you've already spoken about.
Yeah, like, anything you want to add?
Not much I want to add. Like, if you've seen the trailer and you think the trailer's funny, then definitely go watch the film.
Yes.
The trailer sells it perfectly well. like Terry said, there's even more funny jokes within the film as well. Yeah. So,
and that cameo.
Yeah, the cameo is the greatest cameo.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah. Statham, number eight.
My number eight was Saw 10.
I've not watched it.
Do you know, it's really funny. Up until I went to the cinema to see
it. Just like the film was really funny. Oh, yeah. I don't think we watched the same film.
I think you watched the wrong film.
Absolutely hilarious. me and you went and saw it, didn't we, Terry? And up until Saw 10, I'd only ever seen one Saw film.
Yeah.
And I had no idea which one it was. I remember saying to Terry, I remember this happens. And then you started watching them, didn't you? And you said, was it Saw 2?
I think it was Saw 6 or something.
Whatever it was. So I then decided to watch all of the Saws pretty much back to back in the space for about a week and a half. And I literally fell in love with the franchise. Mm. Because I think I said to, you haven't seen it, but someone comes up, I was like, who's that? And she went, oh, Terry's like, oh yeah, she's in most of the films. I'm like, okay. And I thought, oh, what a nice twist at the end. Now I've seen and watched them all, they've all got twists in them. So it's not something new. So I had watched the films. Obviously, you guys have been very vocal about horror films back in the past. I remember saying to someone, Saw films are not my cup of tea, but since watching them, I really, really enjoy them. I really, really enjoyed Saw 10. It's actually probably one of my favourites out of the whole franchise, to be fair.
I've heard Saw 10's a return to form.
Mm-hmm. It's got a decent storyline. Yeah. It's got, because the thing with Saw, it almost did the opposite of what you said with Eli Roth. It started off really classy, story-driven, not much gore, and then by 5, 6, 7, they're just about gore. They're just about the traps. Mm. People having their stomachs cut open and the guts falling out. I mean, this does have a lot of gore in it, doesn't it? Mm. But there is a proper storyline in there. Yeah. It's set before Saw 1 because obviously Jigsaw's on. This is probably the one with the most Jigsaw isn't it?
It's set between 1 and 2.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Jigsaw is actually in it. He's like the main protagonist. It's not just flashbacks and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like him going to try and get cancer.
It's a real
cancer
personal
treatment.
One, isn't it? It's more personal vengeance. Like, it's not.
Yeah,
kind of like his normal role was like, I'm just going to basically, people have done wrong.
Yeah.
And he literally says, you know what, you guys have done wrong to me. I'm going to...
The traps are survivable, but it is like life-changing injuries. Yeah. It's not like, oh, I've had to cut this key out of someone's stomach. It is, I know I'm going to remember this for the rest of my life. But yeah, no, it didn't make my list, but yeah, it's definitely probably the best Saw film since 1, I'd say.
Yeah.
1 is an absolute peak.
Yeah, number 1's a sweet spot, isn't it? I think it always will be as well. I think when I first... When I watched 1 for the first time a couple of months ago, I was like, what an incredibly clever twist that is at the end of that film. And
it just builds up to that end, though, doesn't it? With number 1, which is like he's got to chop his own foot off. And it makes it a big deal. Whereas when you get to like number 5, it's like limbs flying off left.
Yeah, it's like, you've got to cut that guy's head off. Okay, yeah. And it's just... And the reasoning, like the first one, there's a very vivid reason why each person is involved in a trap. And by the end of... the series is in like 7, it's just like, oh yeah, you once looked at someone a bit cross, or like in Dogma, you didn't say I bless you when I sneeze. But yeah, no, I thought it was a really great film.
Yeah.
Number 8
for me, mine was The Creator.
Yeah, I love that
film. Possibly could be higher. It was very good. I think it possibly needed a rewatch to fully appreciate quite how good it is. It will be coming to Disney Plus early next year.
January.
Yeah, but again, it's just really smart sci-fi, and I just like It's one of those things where it's probably not sci-fi, it's just a drama that happens to have this sci-fi element. Like I always say about Battlestar Galactica, people go, oh, sci-fi. Battlestar Galactica is one of the greatest dramas ever. It just happens to be set in space. But this is really emotional.
Haven't you watched The Expanse yet, dude?
I know.
Fucking hell. Like,
I know. He had to fucking crowbar it in. I was looking forward to the first podcast where he couldn't get The Expanse.
I'm just saying, if you like Battlestar Galactica, back me up here, Dan. Now we've got someone who's actually watched
Expanse, I'd say, is superior to Battlestar Galactica, personally.
There you go.
Definitely.
Has it got Trisha Helfer in it?
No, but
well, there
got,
we go.
No,
then
you've got. Trust me, you're fine. You'll never dream of a 6 foot Kiwi lady more than after watching The Expanse.
But no, the creator. I thought it's just like you can imagine. Not exactly. That's exactly how we're going to end up as a planet and as a species. But you can see we might end up quite near to that with that sort of AI actually being a living thing and like the battle between it. But I just thought it was really well done. Like, there's a couple of, like, I wouldn't even say they're twists, but you're led down one path and it's actually something else. Mm. And, like, the big crescendo ending, that took me by surprise as well. But, yeah, I just thought it was just so well done. Like, effects-wise, really well done. Looked beautiful. Alison Janney is an absolute bitch.
Yep.
Which was a bit of a turn-up. But, yeah, no, I really liked it.
Yeah.
Mm. So, I mean, I'd say like visually it was really impressive. Yeah. Like it had a great kind of visual aesthetic.
Yeah.
It looked real. It looked realistic and kind of dirty.
Yeah.
And like
yeah.
you know, it didn't have
old
that kind
future.
Of
future.
Yeah. It didn't have that kind of like clean, almost unrealistic kind of look. So I appreciated that about it.
Mm.
Yeah. Wasn't too keen on the story personally, but you know.
I mean, I loved it personally. Yeah. It's one of my favorite films.
It's gonna cop again.
Yeah.
And John David Washington.
Yeah.
He's like securing himself as the go-to guy when you've got a bit of a weird action film. Obviously, he was amazing in Tenet as well.
Yeah, true. I like Tenet as well. So. Mm. My number eight, Past Lives. I don't know whether anyone actually got to see it.
I didn't even get to see it. Nope. This is your one film that no one else has got on the list.
Okay. I fucking love this film. It was funny. It was cringy in places. Like, you'll essentially watch... I don't know how much anyone knows about it. So, essentially...
I can guess what it, I can guess the plot of the movie from seeing the trailer and the poster.
The idea is, it's a lady who is from... I think she's from Korea. Takes a chance. It starts with them as young children. And she is spending time with this other kid, and they never get to say like "I love you," that kind of thing. These two kids, like teenagers, are clearly very much in love with each other. Spend all their time with each other, and then she moves to America. And from nowhere, they kind of get chatting on Facebook, and he says he wants to come over. She's now moved on. She's married. She's got this husband who's this wonderful guy. Like it goes through them growing up as well. Like drifting apart, like not speaking to each other as much. And he's like, look, I can't stop you going to meet this guy. So, you know, you've got to do it. And so it's from then on, there's clearly this close relationship between the two of them.
I mean, they're probably like soulmates, aren't they? Is the suggestion, I'm guessing.
Yeah. But like the husband is also like, she clearly loves her husband still. And like, it's just really, really, really good. Like you are... really in the shoes of everyone in this film. The whole film starts with two people in a bar, seeing the three of them at the other side, trying to figure out what's going on. Like, what's going on with that? It's like, he, like the third wheel here, or is like the other guy the third wheel here? And it's like the two of them talking in Korean while he's like playing on his phone, essentially. The ending is... it's affecting. It's really good. It's just a great film. This was Empire's number one film, I think, of the year. It's not my number one film, but I really, really liked it.
Does it have like themes of like reincarnation or anything like that within it? Or like kind of suggestion that...
No, not really. It just kind of really plays into the idea that like these two were meant for each other. And life just gets in the way, and whether you're meant for someone or not, it doesn't matter. If life gets in the way, then life gets in the way and you develop your own life and she's already moved on and he hasn't. Like, he definitely comes to New York. He says he comes to New York because he wants to see New York, but he's obviously come to see her. And it's just heartbreaking at times as well, because all three of them are going through so many different emotions and none of them are good. Mm. Like, they're all struggling with whatever it is they're going through. Well worth a watch, I'd say, anyway. So, yeah.
Similar vein to Strays, then.
Yeah, similar to Strays, yeah.
So I just had to break the tension. You were getting a bit emotional there, man.
He actually comes over from Korea to bite the guy's dick off. So, definitely.
So it's definitely worth a watch, yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Have you seen it as well?
No.
I assume it's a mix of Korean and American.
Yeah. Yeah, as well. It doesn't... they speak English when they kind of have to, and that's about it. So it's really good. Number seven, Dan.
For me, number seven is Infinity Pool.
I haven't seen this one.
Affecting.
Yeah, definitely. Similar themes, from what I understand, yeah.
Yeah, there are some sort of themes there.
There's definitely some themes.
It's Brandon Cronenberg.
Yeah.
So it's, rather than body horror, I'd say it's more like kind of like identity horror. Best way to describe it.
That is a very good way of describing it, yes.
It's about a guy who's like a failed author, or like he's written one book but it's not been that successful, and he's kind of married into money, and he's gone on holiday with his wife to this kind of resort where they're kind of penned in. They're not allowed to go outside the resort.
It's like it's a dangerous country but everyone wants to go there.
So it's like dangerous outside of like the resort, and they meet this other couple. Like this woman approaches like the guy because she's read his book, and she's like, she says she's a big fan. And they end up taking a trip outside of the complex with this couple, and end up something bad happens. Someone gets killed, and he gets arrested, and you basically find out this kind of secret about this island, and it gets quite strange and dark from there. I'm not sure how much I want to say.
No, I want to really want to watch it.
I think that's as close as you can get.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yeah. This was our first solo visit to the cinema. It's always been like the four of us. It was me and Dan, reliable Dan, first time. And it's the only time I've ever seen an erect penis on a cinema screen ejaculate.
It's literally the biggest penis I've ever seen in my life. Because it's literally the full stretch of a cinema screen.
Put me off my stroke. And it should be said also that the female that Dan was alluding to there is Mia Goff.
Yeah.
So well worth watching.
Her performance is amazing. The performances are really great in it.
Alexander Skarsgård is the aforementioned penis. Whether it's actually his penis or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
That surprised me. He's got everything else, hasn't
he? Yeah.
But it's very kind of dark. It deals with like themes of like how like people, like the more wealth people have, kind of the more, I'd say, reckless they can become. Or like how wealth kind of breeds this kind of like...
Yeah, it's like people say like...
People act without consequence.
With rich people, it's like, oh, you can't park there. It's they realise, oh, no, I can. It cost me £150. Yeah. And to them, it doesn't matter because they can afford...
The consequences aren't the same, yeah.
Yeah, the consequences have no meaning to them. Like John Terry doing what he wants in parking disabled spaces and stuff.
So it deals with that, and then kind of like colonial tourism is an aspect as well. And it's a really great movie.
I have to give it a watch. Okay, it's number seven, right? Throwing me off there, Terry.
That, to be fair, that sounds really good, actually.
I need to watch that film.
I definitely will watch that.
It is a bit of a mind bender. Like, it's one of those, I can imagine, obviously, if you were watching it at home and you were on your phone for like 2 minutes, you'd be like, what? And you'd have to rewind it because it does sort of jump around and stuff. But yeah, it is fucking good.
And it sounds like House of Pain too. Jump around.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
I got it, but.
Okay.
It wasn't that
funny. Fucking number seven. Come on.
I smiled.
Thanks. Thanks, Steve. Yeah.
Well, my number seven has got the greatest actor of all time in it.
Jason Statham.
Obviously. It's The Equalizer 3.
Oh, nice. I like The Equalizer 3.
For obvious reasons. I'm guessing no one else put this on the list.
No, one of your four only films.
Well, that's a bit unique. For me, I feel like this was kind of like the film that Denzel needed in that series. It was kind of almost like he finally got the piece that he deserved. I felt like the first one was all about whatever it was. Second one was really personal, and this one was very much like, I just want to chill out now. Obviously, he goes to his little village and he plans to leave. Then he thinks, actually, I fancy a bit of this life. But then obviously...
He gets him on coffee.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Do you want to know something weird? It's almost the identical plot to Wonka. But you carry on.
don't do that.
Am I wrong?
No, it's pretty similar, actually.
Yeah, it's carry on.
So it just changes the subject a little bit. It's Wonka film then. Yeah. Is it a prequel then or a sequel?
Yes. It's young Wonka before he's got his factory.
Okay, well, this one isn't young Denzel. This is
Denzel.
Almost retirement Denzel.
Although he's got his eye on a younger lady.
Well, you know, That's fine. It's Denzel, he can do what he likes.
Within reason.
Within reason, yeah. Jesus. But no, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was quite... I feel like it, out of the three of them, I think it started the slowest.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much.
And so. Then you kind of feel like, I'm feeling myself like, I can't... And then obviously... He has that little set to the geezer in the restaurant.
Brilliant.
And then you think to myself, okay, he's just going to send him a message. And then, fuck me, did he send a message?
Yeah,
to,
goes off like a fucking firework.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the second, it's like the whole second act was all very much like, just really explosive. And I think I always found like the showdown at the end of the first one where he's in the super, like their version of B&Q, really big, and same the second one. Like this one was, is it called Home, whatever they call it over there. But like in this one, it was very much a lot more slower. Like he pretty much crawled with the guy whilst and I really quite enjoyed the ending where he kind of attacked everyone in the house as well. I thought it was done really
what
well.
What I loved was the other two have always built up to, oh God, this is the guy he can't beat.
Yeah.
There was no, this was just, yeah, he's just going to work through them.
Yeah.
As at his own leisure, doing what he wants. He kills them in weird and wonderful ways. And it's just...
Yeah.
He does. There's one of them that's like, yeah.
But yeah, like you say, the kickoff where he has like the little set to in the restaurant. And then they're like waiting for him, aren't they? And then he just appears from the other side and runs them over in a fucking van.
Yeah, I liked how it kind of came full circle with like, you then found out the reason why he called the girl.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, because he's the woman who died in the second one.
Yeah.
It's her daughter and it kind of, he was doing it for her. Mm. And that was almost quite a teary eye moment kind of thing when there's that sort of revelation. But I think for me, it's Denzel, so it's always going to be in the list. And I was a little bit worried when I found out they were making it.
Mm.
But actually, when I watched it, I was kind of like, do you know what? It was just, to me, it's a brilliant trilogy.
Because he hasn't made any other sequels, has he?
No, it's
like, three.
So, we've been spoilt for action films this year, that's for sure.
Mm. I haven't watched actually the TV series with Queen Latifah in it.
Me neither.
But again, I've not watched the original Equalizer series with Edward Woodward, whatever his name is. So.
Iwawiwa.
Edward
Woodward, if you take the D's out. Iwawiwa.
Iwawiwa.
Yeah.
Was it a guy who played Perry Mason in the original Equalizer? I think it's something completely different.
I think you're thinking of something completely different. It was the guy who played, what's his face, in The Wicker Man.
Mm.
Yeah. Main characters from The Wicker Man.
Okay.
That's the other thing we want to talk about. Films we've seen at cinema that are old films as well. We'll talk about it briefly as well. So yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Number seven, Terry.
Mine, I didn't actually realize it came out this year. I thought it came out the year before, but it came out in America in 2022, but it came out over here. The Fablemans.
Oh, yeah.
Which obviously had a shitload of Oscar nominations. I don't think it won any.
Mm.
But it's basically like Steven Spielberg's autobiography of his youth and growing up. And it's just, I mean, it's Steven Spielberg, but it's just like a really nice family portrait of a family that's obviously, famously, he always has dysfunctional families or broken families. And this is like his broken family, because I didn't know much about him, but his parents did split up. And that it's almost like the story of that, how he fell in love with film and what happened. Paul Dano plays his dad, and I fucking love Paul Dano. Mm-hmm. I think he's a great actor. Michelle Williams is his mum. Seth Rogen's his weird uncle. Who, spoiler alert, is the reason that his mum and dad's marriage don't survive. But it's just like a really nice film. It's like they move around because his dad's like big in computers. So they end up moving to Silicon Valley. They're Jewish. There's not a lot of Jewish people in Silicon Valley. He gets bullied a lot at school. And he sort of wins over the bullies and stuff. It's just a really nice feel-good film. It's got some sad bits in it, but it's just really nice, really good.
Mm.
Really, really enjoyed it. Not really much more to say.
I've never even heard of it.
Really?
Yeah, honestly. It did really well. The
all ones right, you mentioned so far is the first one I've heard of.
Yeah, no, I think it got nominated for pretty much everything, didn't win a single. But, really good. You see a lot of his... They've recreated a lot of his, like, Super 8 films and stuff that he made when he was little.
Sounds really good.
Mm.
I can't believe I'm the first one mentioning it. Guardians of the Galaxy 3. I fucking love this film. This is my favourite Marvel film in a very long time. I cried at all the sad bits, and there's some fucking
sad bits. There's a lot of sad bits in it,
I knew that was going to happen eventually, so I'm going to put that away now.
He's talking about his penis.
Yeah. And I mean,
showing us his Prince Philip.
It's probably the best, it might be the best trilogy of the Marvel films, the Guardians of the Galaxy ones.
It's up there.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Like, I love the Captain America ones, but this might be better, I think.
I think it's probably got the best. The Captain America films are good.
Yeah.
Two and three are exceptional. But, the first one is probably my least favourite out of a lot of them. But in terms of consistency, all three of them are good. I mean, it's in my list, but I will discuss it. Yeah. Like, when I first went and saw it at the cinema, I wasn't fully taken in.
Yeah.
It wasn't until my second viewing that I thought, actually, really this good. Is actually really, really good. And like you said, I found it the most emotional. I cried my eyes out when they said Drax was born to be a dad.
Yeah.
I was in the cinema on my own on Bank Holiday Monday. And I cried my fucking eyes out.
Like, there are, I mean, there's reasons for it, but there's reasons I've cried. I've cried at so many films this year.
Yeah.
One of the films that didn't make it, we'll talk about in the honourable mentions. But yeah, this one, definitely, I cried my eyes out this one as well, especially with all the stuff with Rocket and Rocket's friends and stuff like that. So good. The bit where they go to the planet with the animal people as well is great as well.
The High Evolutionary is a fucking cunt.
Yeah, he's one of the best bad guys they've had as well. Like, really,
it's
really
quite low-key about it, but just vicious.
Yeah. They've been quite good. I think all three of the films have had really good bad guys. I think Ronan was a really good bad guy. Yeah. Ego was a good bad guy. And I've said before, I found the second film good but annoying. I don't know, I've said that to you before. Yeah. Like, but I watch Marvel films back to back, I tend to get to volume two and I'm like, I like it, but I just find, I don't know why, I just find it really annoying. But all three of the villains in the trilogy have all been really, really good. And they could have done a lot more in the MCU, but they've kind of kept it quite grounded.
Yeah, it just felt like...
It also had the best soundtrack of all of them, I think.
Definitely.
I think the soundtrack stuff from my childhood and my teenage years.
Chain as well, wasn't it?
Well. Yeah. No, Chain's in number two.
That was the first one, wasn't it?
Was it first? No, so it was two, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it had a Space Hog in the meantime.
Yeah, Space Hog in the meantime. Like, it was like a whole kind of 90s soundtrack.
Oh, it had Rocket singing Creep as well at the start. Yeah. That was really good.
Oh, God, this film is fucking great. Yeah, no, I loved it. The one thing I'll say this year is, if last year we started seeing other films pulling away from Marvel and like cinema kind of like looking back a little bit at Marvel, this year really felt like we'd taken another step away from what Marvel had been doing at the cinema. And the exception to that is Guardians of the Galaxy 3, as far as I'm concerned. I think everything else has been good. Everything's been fine. I enjoyed Quantumania. Didn't think it was brilliant, but I liked it. And I liked most of the films last year, but this Guardians of the Galaxy stands out as like, oh, okay, they can still do this kind of film. This is something that's genuinely really good. And
I think like Marvel films have suffered from diminishing returns in a sense, where like the films are of generally good, like they're consistent and they are pretty much like good, competent movies. Yep. But if you keep doing the same thing like that, it's, you know, it starts to get old in a sense.
The best thing they can do this year is literally say Deadpool 3, that's it.
Yeah.
Then we'll come back the following year.
That's kind of where they're at anyway, isn't it?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So
I think Guardians of the Galaxy films they're great in the fact that they're very good at keeping it out of the main sort of MCU timeline. Like, it's not
self-contained, isn't
it? Do you know what I mean? Like, they could...
Their battles make sense as well. Yeah, the people they're up against kind of make sense.
And, like, Adam Warlock was really good as well. I thought Will Poulter did a really good job.
Yeah.
In...
Such
a great addition.
Really, he might get another mention as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, at some point.
And God, man, is he handsome. Fucking hell.
He's a good-looking
He's
dude,
had a glow up.
Tell me about it. I saw him, I think myself, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Another one who's got it all.
Number six, Dan.
Mine... I wonder if I should have put this like higher, like. But Talk to Me is my number six.
Yes.
Probably one of the best horror films I've seen this year.
I've got Talk to Me on my list, so I will mention
it's on my list as well.
But I mean, it's just brilliant, right? Like, it's just a great
really great
film.
Great horror film, great kind of concept.
Yeah.
You know, takes its kind of time with the story, sets up the kind of rules really well, and it's just a really well told, really well shot horror film, with like not a lot of gore, but like a lot of good kind of like jump scares, and there are just certain moments in it which are quite harrowing.
It holds back quite a lot, and then when it goes, it goes, and then it cuts back again.
Yeah.
So it's impactful rather than... Whereas Evil Dead Rise is just about throwing it at you constantly. This was like short, sharp shots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, definitely. I liked it too. Number six?
Soulburn.
I don't know what. Soulburn? Yeah. What's your number six?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
You love that film?
I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it.
Me and Dan were ripping it apart on the way to Wonka.
I really enjoyed it. I mean, the moment the film started, I think there was a couple of things that were so obvious how it was going to end. Yeah. But I just kind of felt like it was so... It was like when they, for me, I said this, Jess started watching it and then she kind of got bored halfway through because she didn't quite understand the bit when he's...
He's about to
start snuffing to come out.
Yeah, well, I'm assuming we can score these films. Yeah. But like, when he starts fucking the grave.
Yeah.
I mean, that's quite late on.
But she was on the phone most of the time, to be fair. So, like, you know.
It's not the kind of film you want someone to walk in at certain random moments within like at the wrong time. It's
But to me, it's like, the best way I described it, and I told someone about it today, and I told them about the film, that imagine you got someone drawing a line, like a kid drawing a line, and then they start kind of going, that's kind of the best way to describe like the plot of the film.
Yeah.
Like, it had ups, it had downs, like, I think I never played Barry, whatever his name is.
Keegan.
I think he's an exceptional actor.
He is a very good actor.
And he always seems
to
play.
He's got the moves at the end as well.
And like, even Jesse.
Nice
Jesse
penis.
Every time you watch him in a film.
Barry and the Keegans.
Yeah. Jesse, like, you have to, ever since she's seen him, he always plays like a really weird character.
Yeah.
And he's very, very good at it. Like I said, some of the film was predictable. Yeah. Like, at the end of it, like, there's a couple of things I was like, okay, fair enough. I was like, obvious. But I generally just enjoyed the film.
Yeah.
I think I went in there not expecting that much. So based on what you guys have said, I went in there kind of a bit like, I don't let people sway my mind that much, but I was like, it's probably not going to be, but it was because it was better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I had that kind of reaction as well, because I watched it today.
Yeah,
and it was a film I was kind of putting off and didn't really want to watch.
Yeah.
But found myself, even though, like, I obviously hated all the characters in it. Most of them were just absolutely terrible people. But despite that, and despite myself, I found myself actually enjoying it and getting into it.
And I think the reason why it made, I could easily just put it at 10 and sort of said it was good. But technically for me, as much as I don't want to admit it, it is a better film than The Equalizer 3. It is a better film than it, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
but like, this is all based on how much you enjoy films.
And I just generally thought that overall, everyone played their part well. Like you said, you hate everyone, which means they've done what they set out to do.
Yeah. You know, Richard E. Grant is by far and away the best character, I think.
I didn't realise how much I really fancied Rosamund Pike.
Oh, she's a beautiful
I've said for years she's really good looking, but even that film, I was like...
I came out with fancy Carey Mulligan more.
Mm, yeah.
She looks like filth in that film.
There's a line in that film, isn't there? He goes, Pamela's funeral, she'll do anything for attention.
Rosamund Pike had some of the funniest lines in it.
She was just brilliant.
They wrote Common People about me.
But it was very much kind of like... It was just... You can imagine like families being that way with that sort of money.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like that's how you. I don't say I look at people with money who are rich. You think they're all like that, but you can imagine people who live. Which I also learned that apparently Rosamund Pike lived in the house that the film was.
Yeah, while they were filming.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So like,
it's not actually called Saltburn.
No.
But it's so I have met like I have like had encountered with like someone like who really rich and they do.
Yeah.
It is actually kind of realistic that some of them are very much like that. It's very contemptible and horrible to other people that they see as below themselves.
Yeah.
But, you know, but that also kind of plays into the twist of the film as well.
Yeah.
That, you know, them being so rich in a way made them vulnerable because they they let their defences down.
Definitely. And it's like I said, there's a nice little twist at the end, I think, you know. Mm. If you kind of went in there not analysing the film as much as we probably do when we watch films, there'll probably be a lot of people go, oh my God, I did not see that coming. But like,
I was waiting for a bigger twist
because
I thought what happened was so obvious. Mm. I was waiting for there to be an actual twist, like, not getting too sure, but I thought there was going to be a reasoning for what happened.
Yeah.
Mm. Like something that had happened previously in his family or something like that, and it was purposeful, where it just seemed to be like a bored child / brat.
I don't want to say too much either because there's things I want to talk about, but I also think people should watch it because I think it's one of those ones that,
and it is on Prime.
I think that's the smartest fucking thing, by the way. Well done to them for getting that on Amazon Prime that fucking quickly.
It's still
because
at the
everyone's fucking watching this film. Like everyone I know, like my Instagram timeline is everyone watching Saltburn at the moment because it's a brand new film that's come on Amazon Prime over Christmas. Yeah. Fucking smart as fuck. And I think they should have done that with the creator. As soon as Rebel Moon came out, whack the creator on Disney Plus. Like, the creator.
Watch a proper film.
Exactly, yeah.
I think what also made it work good as well is like sometimes trailers really give the film away. The trailer compared to the film seems like two completely different.
Trailer made me want to watch the film as well.
Mm. And, oh, yeah, of course.
And whilst
actually
not telling me anything that happens in this film.
Because like, I definitely watched the trailer for the first time viewing a film, and both of us a bit like, okay. Like,
it was another one where it was like the trailer was every film, like beating you over the head with it. I can't remember the song, but it had a really good song over the trailer.
Yeah. Yeah, the soundtrack to the film was really good, you know. It's quite an.
It was 2006, wasn't it? And I'm like, what was I doing at that time? And then certain songs came on. I was like, oh, yeah, that's what I was doing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So it was set in 2006, but they were watching Superbad, which didn't come out to 2007.
That's on IMDb, isn't it?
Mm.
Oh,
I read that on IMDb, and it said like, when I watched it, I said, Jess, like, Superbad didn't come out to 2007. She's on you. Like, and when I'm on IMDb, it says, because they're rich, they probably have had access to early films, or that was their excuse, or something like that. Like,
I quite like that.
But yeah.
I quite like they sit around this tiny TV and they're
doing karaoke as well.
Yeah.
It's also almost like watching, like, I don't want to say normal films, but like watching kind of surf movies.
Like the normal people.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly, yeah. In a kind of almost like a mocking.
Because they dress up for dinner still.
Yeah. And the thing of just that? Like, oh, yeah, we'll throw a party for you. Yeah. And it is like the biggest party I've ever seen
people.
In my life.
Yeah, yeah.
It always ends up being 200, doesn't it? Yeah. Oh, we could dress up. I'll wear my knight's helmet.
Yeah. Because they're solid cast as well.
Yeah.
And I think they.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, yeah, that, lots of good looking people. You can't mock it. Mm. But I just found it a bit style over substance.
Yeah. And we found out that Barry Keoghan probably look alright in lipstick.
Mm. But don't you look? I looked at him in the film yesterday. If someone says, "How old are you?" you'd say somewhere between 25 and 52.
Yeah. Honestly, he's got a very sort of ageless
look. Do you know what I'm saying, Joe? I said that there's a scene when he's walked down the side of the house and he can hear Farley and Felix talking about something. And they go sharp his face. And I said, "Yeah," I said, the exact same thing I said then. He looks like someone between the age of 26 and 52. Yeah. He has that really weird.
Well, he sort of has quite a lot of growth because at the start he's like this little nerd with no friends, and he looks about 12.
Yeah.
And then by the end he's like this big, powerful
character. It's like in Banshees of Inisherin. Like, he comes across as a timid little, like, I don't know how old he's supposed to be in that film, but he can easily pass away as like a 14, 15 year old naive little boy.
He's also arguably the best thing in that film.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm. Sad.
So yeah, really sad. Yeah. Great film.
Yeah, great film.
Number six, Terry.
Thanksgiving for me.
Nice.
Obviously, we spoke about it. Just, I think everything the last two Scream films have wanted to be.
Did Scream make anyone's list? Just out of interest.
It did not. No.
Scream. This is arguably the best Scream film as well, and I think this blew Scream out of the water.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. It's just. It was funny. It was gory. Had a decent plot line.
Mm-hmm.
Really enjoyed it. Had a lovely cackle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really liked it.
My number six is John Wick 4. So it's, I mean, just nothing really to add to John Wick, the John Wick 4 bants. I just said that. I felt exhausted at the end of it. It was so propulsive.
It was like a workout.
Oh my God, it was, but it was so good as well. Absolutely loved this film. And Keanu really just, he's just.
My man.
He's just a movie star. He's not an actor, he's a movie star, isn't he?
Definitely. Like,
yeah.
And what a great person he is as well.
Yeah,
I've never heard one bad story said about Keanu.
I think it would be.
I think the world would end if it came out like Keanu touches children or something.
Oh, I mean, God. Not that drastic, but you know.
But yeah, Keanu doesn't hold door open for women. Oh my God!
Yeah. I knew someone who like met him once.
Oh wow!
And like she was, I think it's when he.
Please don't do this, Dan.
No. So she was at it might have been some music festival when he was playing with his band. Was it Dog Star?
Because he's back on tour with them, isn't he? He's like probably living his dream.
And she said like she was like proper hanging and just felt like absolute crap and was just kind of sitting there like out of it. And he saw her and he like just came out of his like trailer and like went up to her and just handed her like a beer and just like, you know, and then just went off, didn't say a word, just kind of like, you know, like hair of the dog.
Oh,
it's just such a lovely thing.
Maybe it was laced with something.
Maybe, yeah. It probably had a
halo's getting knocked a little bit.
No, what? Oh, Barocca. Probably had a Barocca to help revitalise him.
It probably was an idea. Yeah.
He's famous for doing that kind of like going up to someone and just doing something nice.
Yeah, it was just a really nice, friendly kind of gesture. Just kind of smiled and just handed it and didn't say a word.
Really normal, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just get through.
Because like, he's obviously made a fuck ton of money.
Yeah.
But he just doesn't keep it. He gives it away. He's got loads of charitable foundations that aren't in his name because he doesn't want people to know it's him. He's built loads of children's hospitals and stuff like that.
On his own. Yeah.
Yeah. He's just what a man.
Just a hammer and a dream.
Yeah. So we're at number six. So we're going to save 5-1 for the next podcast. But just quickly, do we want to talk about Orlandis? We've got things to talk about. Classics we've seen at the cinema this year. We've got bad films. Honourable mentions we'll definitely do in the next one, and we've got TV series. What do you want to talk about? What do we want to round this part of the pod out with? You can.
The diabetic needs a piss.
Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to start talking and Steve can join.
Should we talk about shit films?
Oh my God, let's talk about
shit films. Let's go shit films.
Huh?
Yeah. So I'm going to start. We've mentioned it a few times and generally when we do this podcast, we do rip into a certain director.
Yeah.
So let's get straight into Zack Snyder's Rebel Moon.
I haven't seen
it. It is fucking awful.
Yeah.
It is Star Wars... where they say fuck and bugger, basically. Mm. Charlie Hunnam is in it. And for some reason, bearing in mind this is set in a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah.
He's got a Northern Irish accent that he can't hold. And it's just like, have you made a conscious decision to give this character a Northern Irish accent? He couldn't manage the fucking English accent in The Gentleman. And he's fucking English. But it's just everything about... It's like, it starts on this farming planet, they're very peaceful, they all work for each other, this big ship comes into thing, a really big long ship, they land, they go, we need you for the war effort, we're going to steal all of your thing, they kill a guy, they leave a platoon of soldiers, the soldiers all have South African accents, just to really hammer home that they're not nice people. Within a day, they're trying to rape people. Robot that is designed to never fight back. When they unpack it, they're like, oh my God, this robot never fights back. And they start shooting their own robot again to show what cunts they are. The second it all starts kicking off, the robot kills one of them. Completely devoids his own program. It just goes, no, I'm not having this. You South African twat. And it's Zack Snyder. So it was meant to be one film that was 2 hours long. It's now been split into two films. This one's 2 hours long. There is a fight scene in a bar and it is like her gun is a slow motion gun. Because when she pulls the trigger, it hits slow-mo. Virtually every bullet is slow motion. And it's just... And it is Star Wars. Not literally, but there is an Emperor. There is Vader. There is Luke. All of these characters exist.
There's more to it than this.
I've heard... Like, cause I haven't watched it myself yet. None. Oh, thanks, Barney. Yeah.
So what film are we talking about?
Rebel Moon.
Yeah. No, but because like me and Dan are both like big into Warhammer, there have been people mentioning certain things in Rebel Moon that seems like it's directly ripped off from Warhammer, like down to like the names. So is there something like there's like the Mechanicum in the film, which is basically a faction from Warhammer?
There's a character called Belisarius, and that's a big name in Belisarius. Belisarius Call
is a 40k character.
They're called the Mechanicus Militarum as well.
Yeah, which is...
It's a direct rip-off. Yeah.
Yeah.
The poster itself looks like Deathcore Creek from Warhammer 40k as well.
Yeah, the soldiers look like Imperial soldiers from Warhammer 40k.
It looks... I'm convinced that something will come out at some point that one of the writers actually got bored and just typed...
I thought it was actually Star Wars,
but 40k into ChatGPT. I genuinely think that's what's happened.
And then also a standard Zack Snyder trope, as well as a slow motion, is there is a director's cut, which apparently he's now saying it's not even like it's a slightly longer film. It is a completely different film because he always envisioned it being R-rated. And the one that just got released is PG-13 rated.
So how is this not his film?
So basically Netflix said, make what you want. And he was like, I want to make this. And they were like, yeah, can you make it PG-13? And they basically said, as a thing, film both. We will release that as the big tentpole. And then you can also release your version. So it was always the plan that he would get his own R-rated, which I assume is just going to have tits in it.
Yeah.
Is that like his like gimmick now? Like when presumably his director's cuts must make more money. Mm. Like for the studios to
That's probably what they're looking at. They're thinking, we'll have this and then there'll be the big release the Snyder cut. But apparently it's going to come out just before part two. But he was literally filming it alongside and would just be like, right, now we're doing a cut for the R-rated version.
If you're going to do that, wait till both of them come out and release the Snyder cut of both them. Release the 8-hour version of
I don't know if it's any longer, but you said like it's not like your standard director's cut, which is, that scene's 5 minutes longer, this character's now in it. It's a completely different sort of
version.
I'd love
if it was a completely different film. Like instead of being a sci-fi movie, it's like some sort of kitchen sink drama.
With slow-mo.
It's actually a Dogma film based around the 90s concept.
But I would recommend watching it because it is like one of those laughably shit films.
Interesting.
But
you watch it because I want to see all these 40k references.
I do sometimes like watching purposely bad movies, so we'll save it for a bad movie night.
Hello, You Fool, I Love You, Come for the Joyride. Let's talk about that film, shall we?
I can't talk about it. I've only seen 20 minutes of it.
The best 20 minutes we saw was enough to tell me I didn't want to watch any more of it.
We got to look very racist because we went to see Joyride.
Yeah.
It was a secret screening, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And obviously it's about Chinese people living in America and they go back to China. We decided it was too much when they went back to China. So it was like, we can cope with them in America, but if they're in their own country, I can't stand for this. And we left.
You went
back in though, didn't you, Dan?
So I watched it on a plane. I said, right, I've got to watch this film. I've watched 20 minutes. I'm going to watch the rest of this film. I thought there is no better opportunity than somewhere where I cannot literally escape than to watch this film. And it's... I mean, it's better than the first 20 minutes suggests. We've seen the funniest bits in it, I think. There's just some weird fucking bits with a basketball train running, team seemingly running a train on them.
Was this the film that you were giving us a running commentary?
Yes.
You watched it here.
So there's like one of them has like a threesome with like two basketball players and they talk about like how they're basically penetrating all the holes. And it's like, and then there's, yeah, and each of the basketball team suffers a different sex injury. And it's really, it goes on, for, that scene goes on for about 10 minutes. And it's like, this is feeling almost uncomfortable now. It's there are moments in it that are so good when you find out what the tattoo is on her vagine. That's entertaining. But it's not a very good film. But it's by far and away not the worst film I've seen this year. But we'll probably come back to that. So, any bad films, Dan?
Mine's going to be a controversial one. Mm-hmm. The Creator.
Boom!
I wouldn't say it's like a bad film. It did annoy me quite a lot. I think the whole premise being based around this guy who's basically like a spy cop who's gone undercover, you know, had sex with and impregnated like the person he's meant, like, you know.
Yeah.
It just rubbed me up the wrong way that we constantly focus on his pain and his trauma after like he gets, you know, her killed or whatever, and it just really wound me up.
Yeah, fair enough.
And so, yeah, just on that premise, I was just kind of, I couldn't get on board for a while with that movie because...
It's all right, mate, we're not recording
all
audio.
Should I say all that again?
No, you go for it, because that's staying in, that was gold. Because I was listening, but I was also watching Steve struggle with the pins.
I'd like to keep a happy, tidy household. Sorry, Dan. I don't
know. No, I'd finished ranting.
There's one I could mention, but I'll leave it for you.
Well, I think we could double team this one.
We'll still double team it, but one that I've... A cinematic one I'll go with, because I've got a few on here that were streaming only that were shit. Pet Sematary Bloodlines was fucking awful, but that was a Paramount Plus only. But 65, the film with Adam Driver, where he ends up on prehistoric Earth, and it's just so generic. Adam Driver just seems like one of those people that wouldn't be in this film. I can only imagine that he somehow got tricked into it, or it was one of those, oh, if you want to make this film, you've got to do this film for us as well. Because it is just not an Adam Driver film. It's literally just him and a little girl on a planet. He's got like a laser gun. It's just, it was fucking shit. It was no redeeming.
It doesn't
redeeming,
look good. It doesn't look
no
good.
No redeeming feature. I think it was on Amazon Prime for like 99p to rent for a while. So I was like, oh, fuck. I'll give it a go, but it was genuine, nothing redeeming about it at all. It was so predictable, so obvious what was going to happen, just really dull. And Dan, now the main course.
Should we do it, yeah. Exorcist Believer is one of the worst films I've seen in the last decade, I think.
Yeah.
I think it doesn't help that we kind of double-teamed it with The Exorcist.
Yeah, so the other theme of films we've seen, yeah, so it was the 50th anniversary of The Exorcist, and then the week after we went and saw this dirge.
Yeah.
Dirge.
So there is a literal scene where they're trying to put an Avengers style team.
Yeah, they've got a rabbi,
exorcist from different
voodoo lady
together.
Is that actually true?
Yes.
Yeah.
The reason why I say is that true, because I remember went to, I think we went and saw another film we'll probably mention.
Yeah.
And I thought you said that as a joke. That's why I laughed. And I wonder why no one else laughed when you said it, because I genuinely thought.
No, it's like I'm getting a team together because like they need, and it's literally a voodoo priestess, a Catholic, a Christian,
and Black Widow,
a rabbi,
an atheist.
Yeah,
I don't believe in what's going on right now.
But it's just they, considering like supposedly David Gordon Green, the director who made the Halloween sequels, wanted to make it because he loved the original film. I mean, Mark, if you want to hear why this film was shit, you've got to listen to Mark Kermode's 8 minutes.
We stood in the cold watching that. Because about 20 minutes in, my only thought was, I need to see what Mark Kermode, who's the biggest Exorcist fan in the world, thinks of this film. Like, that I was transfixed by this idea that I wanted to see what he thought of this film. And
it was everything we hoped it would be. Eight minutes
where it feels like he didn't take a breath. No. And he was just, like, continually just rants on
but
about
yeah,
it.
But yeah, it was like, where you said, oh, like, the Halloween first one that he made, you could tell that that was someone who loved the Halloween films, used everything that was in this film. It felt like the person that had watched it and loved it had watched it on YouTube. Because everything is so... Shots of a dog barking, shots of a head spinning round. The fact that it's called The Exorcist Believer and there's barely a fucking exorcist in it.
The cameos...
Well, it sounds like there's loads of exorcists at one point.
There's lots of priests and religious people, but exorcist, he sat in the car pissing himself during the exorcism. And it's just, everything about it is just, like in the original Exorcist, you've got like Captain Howdy appearing in the corners and stuff. In this, it, like the whole screen would cut out and it would just cut to like a demon going at the screen. And it had no impact whatsoever. There's two possessed girls. Everything that's happening to them, you just don't give a fuck about.
I don't want anyone watching this film, so I'm going to spoil the shit out of it. They bring back fucking, what's her face, the mum.
Yeah, the mum from the original first Exorcist. One.
And for no reason, she goes and tries to perform an exorcism.
Yeah,
no reason at all. Like she's written books about.
Because now she's become an expert in the Exorcist. Yeah, yeah. In Exorcism.
And she doesn't speak to Regan anymore. They had a falling out.
Even though at the end of the Exorcist, the whole thing is we're going to forget all this happened. And we're going to move away. The end of the. I don't care about spoiling the Exorcist either. It's 50 years old. The whole thing is they move away and they try and forget everything that ever happened. Now she's obviously 2 years and got bored and went, fuck it, I'm going to write a book about Exorcism.
I'm not getting any acting jobs. I better write a fucking book.
And then, how does she lose her eyes?
So
I can't remember.
So she goes, the dad of one of the children finds out about her and goes to speak to her to ask for help. And for some reason, rather than going, fuck off, it went quite badly last time, or seek professional help, she's like, sure, I'll come along. And they go to the other girl's house. And in a copy of the fuck me Jesus crucifix moment, the possessed girl stabs her in the eyes with a crucifix. But it doesn't kill her.
She just loses her eyes.
Yeah.
In a really comical way, almost.
Yeah.
The end of it...
Well, so she must have two crucifixes, presumably.
No, she goes...
Oh. Yeah, she just goes... She's just like sat on her chest, pumping at her.
The end of it, as well, she's sitting there, like the very end, after all the whatever happens concluded.
Yeah.
She's sitting there, and the only reason they were ever going to show up, for starters, with her two eye patches on her eyes, completely blind now, was obviously what was going to happen at this point. And I leaned over to Terry and went, don't fucking do
this. The door opens and you see a female hand and he's like, no.
Don't do this.
And then Regan goes and they reunite together. And obviously, because the plan is...
Stay away from this fucking film. Please stay away from this film.
Yeah, I mean, I heard like the mum from the original Exorcist movie, she only got like appeared in this... So she got the money to give to charity or something. She just got a massive payday.
She was offered it. She turned it down and they came back with so much money she couldn't say no and she created a scholarship or something. I don't even want the money, but it's enough money.
It's like the only good thing that came out of it.
But supposedly, because it's Blumhouse, so then I think this must be Blumhouse's biggest flop.
Yeah, they spent a fucking
$400 million on buying the rights. And as part of that, contractually, they have to make two sequels. They bought a trilogy, and part of the deal, they said,
$400 million.
We will make the trilogy.
How much money do you reckon this one made?
Wouldn't have made anywhere near that. No. When you consider, like, Halloween, I think they spent 10. Insidious was $1 million. Paranormal Activity was $30,000 or whatever.
Yeah, horror
films
are genres.
This is completely against
like...
what they do normally, and they fuck themselves right up the arse. Because contractually, they have to make them. Supposedly the next one's meant to be Deceiver, so possibly the exorcism didn't work.
Yeah. And then the next one's like Redeemer or something.
Yeah,
like
but
that,
it is just... Had it not been called The Exorcist Believer, had it just been called The Believer, it might be okay.
It's not.
But there's so... But it would be better.
It would be, yeah.
There's so, like, they do the Power of Christ Compels Yous in there, a head spinning's in there, like, all of the bits that you sort of, when you think of The Exorcist... are in there, but they don't fit, and they're so forced, and it's just... It looks too shiny and well-produced
like
as well.
Like it was made by someone who had seen not The Exorcist, but like a 5-minute rundown of The Exorcist.
Yeah, like we said, like one of those
crappy YouTube like highlight videos where they go,
"This is moments from The Exorcist." Yes. Yeah,
well, exactly, this is the meaning behind the film The Exorcist. And they
they didn't have a meaning.
but there's kind of videos I'm talking about generally are really bad at explaining like themes and.
David Gordon Green said this about Friedkin. I was looking forward to showing Friedkin the film because I never communicated with him. My understanding was that he didn't want involvement in the film production, but he would give us his thoughts after the movie. Here's what he actually said. William Friedkin, this is his friend, said, William Friedkin once said to me, "Ed, the guy who made these new Halloweens is about to make once in my movie, The Exorcist. That's right. My signature film is about to be extended by the man who made Pineapple Express. I don't want to be around when that happens, but if there's a spirit world and I come back, I plan to possess David Gordon Green and make his life a living hell."
Jesus.
So yeah, it's not very good.
No, and it's so it's just, oh, just crap.
Mm-hmm.
Just crap.
Any more? Three more? I've got one more.
I've got one more, and I've got a film that I found disappointing.
Okay.
So the one film, other film I hated, I didn't like Megan.
Megan?
I didn't like the film Megan.
Interesting.
Is that because she kills a dog?
That is pretty much the main reason why. But I feel like it was good. I feel like, I don't know, it came out quite early on in the year, didn't it? I remember going to see it.
Yeah, it was very good.
Me and you went and saw it, didn't we? And I remember at the time I worked with Dan, I think I went and said, there's one reason why I hated the film. Yeah. I think you said, did this happen? I was like, maybe, but I just don't know. For me, it just, you don't fuck around with dogs. if you don't kill a dog, then when you don't actually see her kill the dog, you see her grab the dog, don't you, from the thing.
Yeah, and then you hear the...
So you take him by.
If she hadn't killed the dog, would you hate the film?
Probably not as much. I don't think it was... you take away the dog kill thing, it was just more creepy than scary. Do you know what I mean? Which obviously the effect they were going for, but yeah, the moment, like I said, the moment you fuck around with dogs, you lose my support.
You should get that put on a t-shirt.
So yeah, that was for me.
I've only got one more, and that's Five Nights at Freddy's. I thought that film was really bad.
Yeah, I didn't really have high hopes for that, but it was just so boring.
Yeah, my God, did they bury the lead of the fun thing about Five Nights at Freddy's being animatronic robots trying to kill you, and just with what felt like a really wishy-washy plot that they continue to hammer home throughout the entire fucking film.
Yeah, it was just okay. It wasn't anything special. It was.
Yeah. I think that's about it though. Steve, anyone? You said you had one more.
Well, I had one that I found, like, the Marvels. I found really disappointing.
So
I
like the Marvels.
Yeah, I enjoyed the Marvels.
I didn't enjoy it. I felt like it was just too silly, too over the top. You know,
didn't make the top 10. No, I still quite enjoyed it.
I think I said coming out, it's probably the first Marvel film I'm not even going to bother buying on Blu-ray when it comes out.
You will.
I mean, the only good thing about it was Kamala Khan. I thought she was top draw. Other than that,
you didn't finish the series, though, did you, Miss Marvel?
Yeah, I did finish. It was She-Hulk I didn't finish.
Oh. Ms. Marvel's, yeah, I think she kind of stole the show in that as well. To be
Yeah.
But like, I agree with that. But I thought she was excellent.
I like the silliness of it all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Me too.
I hate the film. I just
didn't like the sequence of the cats eating people.
I fucking loved that.
That's amazing.
That was hilarious.
I think that it might have come down to the fact that I feel like we've had such a Marvel overload the last sort of couple of years that I do feel like sometimes, like you said earlier, that the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which probably will come up later on, it did kind of bring back Marvel again a little bit. Like you say, Quantumania was a good film.
Yeah.
Like, I had nothing against it.
I rewatched
it,
recently. It's better than I remember.
I do like it, but I just feel like, I feel like it's been a very, whenever I noticed last year my list had two films on it that I did enjoy it, but wouldn't have made my list had. Because obviously since I last saw Squad, I've watched all of your lists and my list would have been completely different.
Well, we were saying, weren't we, Dan? There's a lot of films this year that probably top 20, but they'd be top 10 from like a couple of years ago.
Yeah, but I think, I don't know, maybe I just feel like, I don't want to say I'm getting bored of Marvel films, but I think we've had a bit
I
of
think
a...
think it's okay to say it.
Yeah.
Because I think even
we've
Marvel
just had too many.
Now. Yeah.
We went from like two films a year and a slow build-up to Avengers and then Infinity War 2 just... Have six TV series a year, have three films a year.
Yeah. I think also I wasn't expecting much from it. Do you know what I mean? I wasn't expecting to go in there and be like, this might be the best Marvel film of since Endgame or No Way Home, but yeah, I just didn't really. I think you said when I came out, you could tell I didn't enjoy it because I was watching the film, but
I thought it was fine. But I'm kind of with you. Like,
if I watch it again, I might think, actually, do you know what? Actually, that was better than I remember. But
I just feel like at the moment, the Marvel movies are kind of where, like, best analogy I can think of is like they're like Rocky 3 right now. They're like. It's like they hit their top with Avengers Endgame, and at that point they should have, you know, taken a step.
They should have
back,
had a break or something,
or maybe move to or do something, or like they got like the Fantastic Four and X Men, maybe just do something completely different and just start with that and just slow it down. But no, instead they knew that they'd lost like their kind of biggest draws of like Iron Man and Captain America, and so they just started just throwing everything out. Yeah. Like thinking that this would keep people's interest by just going full hog.
There's no direction, though, is like, there?
Because even if they just stuck with the TV series, because the first few TV series, WandaVision, Loki, Falcon and Winter Soldier, if they'd have just done a few virtually not connected to the greater universe, just little things. And I think that's where some of the films have done better, like Ant-Man, although obviously it builds into the multiverse thing, that's quite insular again. So I think that does quite well. And Guardians, as I say, not really connected.
Totally agree.
Doesn't all have to build to a bigger thing?
Well, that's something that I just said there. That's what I kind of feel like these films are kind of lacking recently, is the fact that from kind of, let's say, the first Avengers film onwards, you can kind of see their direction, where they're going. These films, I feel like, even though they're not necessarily connected in any kind of way, there kind of feels like no, it's using bad analogy, like there's no end game of, like, you know that you know that it's Kang's going to be the next big baddie, but I kind of feel like these films don't seem to connect. They seem to be kind of all being all over the place. I kind of want them to kind of bring it back in again a little bit. And I think that's what Deadpool 3 is going to do.
It's going to be a bit of a reset.
Yeah, and I think that's what they need. Like, they need to have that kind of like, okay, this bit's... I'm not saying I want to have everything connect all the time, but it's almost like they've all gone off and created their own film, this director done that, this director done that. It's kind of like there's no substance to how it's all going to come together
at the end. It's a bit pain by numbers. Like when Marvel films originally came out, it was like, so Captain America Winter Soldier is like a political drama, but a superhero film. Guardians of the Galaxy is a sci-fi film, but also a superhero film.
Yeah.
Iron Man is like a pretty generic action film, but it's also very much a superhero film as well. But they did their own thing.
Yeah.
And now it kind of seems to be very formulaic. And it probably just needs a break. Does just need a break.
I'm a victim of their own success, really.
Yeah, 100%. And having one film next year is going to hopefully... I know we've got a couple of TV series.
And that one film being Deadpool's pretty good as well. Yeah. Like, the Deadpool films are fun.
What films... I don't even know what all of the films come out. What's after Deadpool 3? Fantastic Four, maybe?
Fantastic Four, but they still even haven't announced the cast, so that's not...
Eternals. I think they're holding fire. I've got Blade in there somewhere as well.
That's being rewritten now, isn't it? Because they weren't happy with that. Eternals 2 is potentially there. Doctor Strange 3 is potentially, but I don't think there's much physically confirmed with a release date and with like a cast in place.
I think that's not a bad thing. I think see how Deadpool 3 does and then plan it out from there.
Because Deadpool 3, whatever it was happened with, he won't be named, but like Deadpool 3 could kind of change that. I had a conversation before we recorded what they're going to do with Kang and all this sort of stuff. There's pros and cons to recasting, but there's also pros and cons, like you said, Dan, of actually taking Kang character out of it and maybe reintroducing him further down.
Well, you can look at it as that he's dead in Ant-Man.
So it'd be quite interesting to sort of see. It's a very make or break couple of years for the future of the MCU, isn't it? Because either if the release is going to hit, if it doesn't, they're going to have to redo it again.
Just focus on like the Echo and Daredevil shit and shit like that for the time being.
I think it's quite telling that we don't have a Fast and the Furious cast yet, because apparently that is because no one wants to be Reed Richards. Obviously, there was the big rumours about Pedro Pascal was there, and obviously that hasn't been announced. You assume he's walked away from that. Adam Driver, they wanted, he walked away. From what we understand, the other three are in stone, but they want to do a big, here is the Fantastic Four, here's Sue. And apparently part of it is because Sue Storm is the main character, and that's why a lot of the men don't want to be involved, because they're going to be a subsidiary character. And obviously there's talk of
surely they should all be the main character.
It will follow her, like the main pull of the story is Sue Storm. And obviously talk of sex swapping Silver Surfer as well.
Silver Surfer's fairly genderless anyway.
I think potentially you've got even like the actors and the actresses now are sort of thinking like, whereas before it was like, oh god, you want to offer me a seven film deal, I'm in. They're even stepping back now and going, do I want to be in it? Is it going to work? Is this multiverse saga actually going to be as good as the Infinity Saga?
I think they just... Marvel needs to be put in a position where they need to really try, I think.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
they've got so successful. And it feels
hopefully
like
James Gunn's DC Gods and Monsters universe or whatever.
It sounds God awful, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm curious about the superhero.
I'm kind of hopeful for Superman Legacy.
Yeah, so.
I mean, a lot of people in it, though.
Yeah. I hope that it's going to be great. There's a person, this is what I was saying the other day, it might have been you guys. This is the reason why I'm in no rush to see Ant-Man, because they're redoing the whole, the DC universe. This film leads to nothing.
You mean Aquaman?
What did I say?
Ant-Man.
Yeah, I meant Aquaman, my apologies. that's why I'm not, you go and watch it, you just know it's going to be a dead end.
Yeah.
Any post-credit they have is going to mean fuck all.
Yeah, but you can still enjoy it.
You can still enjoy it, but like you also like that's the problem with I've never seen the DC universe is like anything more than okay, maybe they're going to do another one. Like it's never really been.
They made
like,
a film that very nearly made my top 10 this year. That's all I'll say.
What, Blue Beetle?
Well, no, that was up there as well actually. Flash. But Flash.
Oh, yeah, very, Flash. That might come up. Not necessarily on my list, but it might come up in conversation.
Just quickly then, we'll do TV series in the next one. Mm-hmm. Let's do, did anyone see any films, like legacy films at the cinema they enjoyed this year? That
previously mentioned The Exorcist, that was
Exorcist,
fucking brilliant to see.
Yeah. Hellraiser.
Yeah, that was
I've seen that for a while.
First time
really
seen
that.
Hellraiser.
Yeah, really, but you've seen it. Hellraiser 3. You've got a weird catalogue of films you've seen.
My friends growing up, like had loads of horror movies. My mum wouldn't let me watch them, so I'd go around my friends to watch them, and so I pretty much got to watch things when they wanted to watch stuff. And so I've seen loads of different horror films, but completely in the wrong order. And just like, you know, yeah. So I'd like the Friday 13th films. I've seen like 3, 4, 6, and 8. You know,
And one. Now you were at one.
Yeah,
so
saw
one. Yeah.
Number one. That was like the first time seeing that.
Aliens. I saw Aliens this year as well.
Shining.
Yes, we did.
Shining. Yeah, Shining. And me and Terry went to see The Wicker Man. I fucking love The Wicker Man.
But little did we know.
That's not what we're laughing at. Yeah.
Little did we know that it was a anniversary screening where they were showing a Q&A that they'd done before, which lasted for longer than the film, it felt like.
Yeah, so it was an hour and a half.
Edith fucking Bowman.
Hour and a half film that lasted 3 hours. Because they had an hour and a half from this pre-recorded event.
With a band Q&A. Playing all the songs.
Band playing... Not some of the songs, all of the songs from The Wicker Man, which is great and it's fun and in context. If it was on a DVD, I'd love to watch it.
Yeah.
The whole thing. It was really good. Didn't need to be before the film, which
and
I just
And then they had Q&A with people and they'd go and they would introduce a clip and then they would show a clip of the film you're about to watch.
Yeah.
And it just pissed me off. When we booked it, we had no idea. Had I known, we would have arranged it. We would have gone in just in time for the film.
So I'm fairly sure I had that booked to go and I cancelled, didn't I, last
year? Yeah, but obviously The Wicker Man itself...
Yeah. Still fucking great. It looks amazing. It's in the movie.
Yes, so I've seen it a couple of times, but seeing it on the big screen, there's a couple of films that I've always liked. And like when I first saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original on the cinema, it's like, I understand now why this is a great film, not just a good horror film. And it's the same for Wicker Man.
I had the same with watching The Shining on the cinema for the first time. That was just amazing.
Yeah.
I know I didn't go to cinema to see it. I did watch Wicker Man on DVD 2 days after you guys watched it because I felt a bit left out. But it is a great film.
I'm trying to think. There's been quite a lot of back at the cinema. I can't think of any others. Because obviously we had the horror season. Mm. Saw Home Alone 2 as well recently as part of the Christmas one. That was great seeing Marv catch those bricks on the face. I fucking love Home Alone 2.
I saw a great comment, which is that it was his dad is complaining about how much money he's cost him. You've left your son at home for 2 Christmases running that prick.
It's only $900. Exactly. And Tim Curry, obviously amazing, as the concierge.
I love Tim
Curry. Piers Morgan's cameo.
Yeah, Piers Morgan's cameo. Donald Trump's cameo.
Piers Morgan had a cameo in
No.
There's this running joke that he's the bird lady.
Even he's tweeted about it as
He tweeted to deny that it's him.
Yeah.
I saw that. I didn't see any of the other Christmas films, but they had literally Home Alone 1. Mm. I think The Grinch was there. Love Actually, they had...
lovely.
Muppet Christmas Carol, I really wanted to go and see, but it didn't work.
One and a Love Letter, actually.
Yeah.
It's not very good.
It's not great. I watch it every year.
We'll talk about this off the pod, because there'll be people on the pod that listen to the pod that like the film, and they're entitled to like the film, and you're entitled to like the film, Steve.
Yeah, but you're not entitled to not like the film.
I've not seen it, and I hate it.
Last time I have you guys over my house.
Right, I think we're going to wrap it up there. Mm-hmm. Do 5-1 and then do TV series and honourable mentions in the next one. If you want to contact us, hit us up, TMTOOH on Instagram, Twitter. Thank you, Terry.
It's called X.
Huh?
It's called X.
X. Oh, I don't give a fuck. Come join us on the Discord. Discord's a fun place to be. So just literally, it's the pinned tweet on Twitter. It's the bio on the Instagram. We'll see you there. And join us for the part two of this, which will be 5-1. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Guten Tag.
Back probably in a day's time, actually. So, Guten Tag. That took me a while. Anyway, thank you very much, and goodbye.